Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The New Localism, How Cities Can Thrive in the Age of Populism, by Bruce Katz and Jeremy Nowak, narrated by Tristan Morris. Preface. This book evolved over many years of observation, engagement, and analysis, but the political events of 2016-2017, from Brexit to the election of Donald Trump, from the United States pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement to new populist movements in Europe and elsewhere, brought clarity and urgency to our central focus on the importance of local activity, and prompted us to write the book now. The two of us have spent our professional lives working to enhance the prosperity of cities and metropolitan areas and expand the opportunities of people who live there. We bring complementary but distinct experiences in urban practice and policy. One of us, Jeremy, has worked at the local level, primarily in Philadelphia, creating one of the largest community investment institutions in the nation, and then went on to chair the board of the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia, as well as advise philanthropies, universities, and investment companies on urban development strategy. The other, Bruce, has focused on urban innovation, infrastructure, and inclusion at the national level, holding senior staff positions in the U.S. Senate and the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, and then starting a think tank on urban and metropolitan communities at the Brookings Institution. Our different vantage points have given us a healthy respect for the power of national and state governments. We have also come to understand that the most forward-thinking initiatives in the nation, including those that deal with pressing social, economic, and environmental concerns, are emerging from local communities far more than from national policies or platforms. Why? The reasons are myriad and are based in deep structural changes in the economy and society, more than in ephemeral political cycles. Despite many positive expressions of change across the nation, American political discourse is largely and understandably focused on the dysfunctions of Washington, D.C. and many state houses. Much less airtime goes to hard-working problem solvers in American cities and local communities. Discord plays better than collaboration. Defining problems will always get more coverage than delivering solutions. Populism has cachet, even when it supports a largely incoherent political agenda, or loses most elections. Solutions, particularly those that involve deep institutional change, can be downright boring. Yet a quiet but profound movement is underway in hundreds of cities, towns, and rural communities to meet the future head-on. The time has come for those initiatives to take center stage. That is the purpose of this book. The movement that we call New Localism is analyzed in this book, situated in its historical context, and framed in a future based on its successes and challenges. These stories are not reducible to political soundbites, nor are they the product of overnight success. But local activity is changing America in positive ways, and these actions draw from global innovations and have enormous implications for cities around the world. Many see the times in which we live as concerning, even chaotic. We view this book as an act of optimism. Positive energy and affirmative possibility flow from the places and people we profile. Vibrant, innovative, pragmatic, and relentlessly future-leaning and progress-seeking. 1. Power Reimagined. My interest is in power, how power works. Robert Caro, The Power Broker. This is a book about reimagining power. For generations, the locus and nature of power seemed settled, reflected in the vertical lines of political authority. National and state governments sat at the apex, writing laws, promulgating rules, distributing resources, and running the country. Cities and metropolitan regions, the places where the overwhelming majority of the population lives, and where national wealth is disproportionately generated, resides at the bottom, often acting as administrative arms of higher levels of government, more than as agents in charge of their own future. This picture, hierarchically neat and textbook tidy, is radically changing. The location of power is shifting as a result of profound demographic, economic, and social forces. Power is drifting downward from the nation-state to cities and metropolitan communities, horizontally from government to networks of public, private, and civic actors, and globally along transnational circuits of capital, trade, and innovation. These changes are shattering traditional notions of where power lies, the people and institutions that wield it, and how transformative change occurs. New sets of leaders are upending conventional wisdom about who solves problems in an age with too much partisan conflict and not enough common purpose. Power is not what it used to be. It is less confined to the authority of government alone, and more fueled by the market potential that comes from the concentration of economic, physical, and social assets in real places. It is less defined by scales of influence distributed across layers of government, and more derived from sources of civic strength that come from collaborating across sectors. The exercise of power is also not what it used to be. The ability to get things done has shifted from command and control systems to the collective efforts of civil society, government, and private institutions. It is vested in and affected by leaders and institutions that convert market and civic power into fiscal, financial, and political power. In sum, power increasingly belongs to the problem solvers, and these problem solvers now congregate disproportionately at the local level, in cities and metropolitan areas across the globe. New localism embodies this new reality of power. It is the 21st century's means of solving the problems characteristic of modern life: global economic competition, poverty, the challenges of social diversity, and the imperatives of environmental sustainability. To be clear, local action is not a replacement for the vital roles the federal government plays as a distributional and regulatory platform. Rather, it is the ideal complement to an effective federal government, and in times such as the present, an urgently needed remedy for national dysfunction. New localism also reflects the reality that cities are many things at once: geographic units, regional economies, markets for goods and services, networks of leaders from government, business, and civic groups, and places of shared culture and values. Today, progress is evident among vanguard cities and metropolitan regions that are inventing new models of growth, governance, and finance. These novel and distinctive models focus intentionally and purposefully on inclusive and sustainable outcomes as measures of market success. Growth. These vanguard cities are igniting growth by leveraging their distinctive sectors to commercialize research, seed and grow businesses, and create quality jobs. Local leaders are aligning their educational systems to provide workers with the skills they need to obtain jobs in an advanced economy, and are seeking solutions to deep-seated poverty through early childhood education and school-to-career strategies. They are creating the civic and physical spaces that enable the seamless exchange of ideas and the continuous invention and deployment of products and technologies. And they are responding to the urgent environmental imperative to reduce carbon emissions by embracing renewable energies, developing more walkable, bicycle-friendly, and transit-accessible cities, cleaning up watersheds through the use of green infrastructure, and converting public buildings to energy-efficient uses. Governance. These vanguard cities are catalyzing growth through forms of governance that align the distinctive perspectives of government, business, philanthropy, universities, and the broader community. Governance is being driven by collaboration rather than coercion, stewarded by diverse networks rather than by elected decision-makers alone, and characterized by iterative problem-solving rather than by rigid and prescriptive rulemaking. Governance is also being exercised by new institutions that are designed to leverage the public legitimacy of government with the entrepreneurialism of the private and civic sectors. Finance. These vanguard cities are capitalizing growth by using a vast array of tools to fund investments in innovation, infrastructure, and inclusivity initiatives. Cities are bankrolling the future by converting their market power into tangible, investable resources. In the process, a new field of metro finance is emerging that aggregates and deploys capital from community, national, and global sources to align investments with local economies and priorities. The public sector is embracing both traditional mechanisms, such as voter referenda, and new mechanisms, such as value capture, to invest in physical and human capital, infrastructure, and children. At the same time, private and civic capital is spurring innovation by investing in firms and intermediaries that translate research into tangible products. To make progress on these fronts, local governments are beginning to tackle legacy liabilities, to focus tax revenue on what works, and to manage public assets in more productive ways. New localism is a nascent phenomenon, a work in progress. The harsh reality is that the dramatic devolution of responsibility has not been met with a concomitant delegation of capacity or resources. 21st century problem solving is essentially taking place amid 20th century financial and institutional arrangements that are antiquated and inadequate. If cities, in short, are to be the world's problem solvers, municipalities must grow new sets of leaders and invent new intermediaries and institutions and align with this disruptive era and its heightened importance. Cities and their partners must think anew about everything from the fine print of financial instruments to the vehicles for cross-sectoral collaboration to the management and disposition of public assets. There is no doubt that a growing number of cities are stepping up to this challenge with newfound confidence. A restructuring economy has placed a premium on high-skill and high-productivity industries clustered in more dense urban environments. Together with changing demographic preferences, these economic dynamics have increased the market value and market power of such communities. New technologies that enable driverless cars and personalized medicine are not just being invented in cities. They are being tested and deployed there. Cities are on the front line of the next economy. This shift in where and how America solves problems represents the formative stage of new localism. While deeply rooted in American civil society, today's new localism emerges out of crises in local economies and in response to the vacuum left by higher levels of government. Action had to be taken to rescue communities and cities from decline. New localism exists as much because of need as by design, reflecting both the limited capacity of the local public sector and the narrow reach and vision of conventional private sector investors. The convergence of economic crises, the absence of solutions at higher levels of government, and the American inclination for subsidiary makes new localism urgent and inevitable. New localism has the potential to outlive this moment of crisis and change, to capitalize on the profound economic and demographic shifts of the past four decades, which have favored an urban resurgence in the United States. Markets are revaluing cities, and new localism is the vehicle through which leaders can translate market power into the resources that can finance the future. This is how communities will survive and thrive in our current age. Populism and new localism. While the rise of a very vocal populism has received significantly more attention than the quiet problem-solving efforts of new localism, both are the products of structural dynamics that have resulted in widespread fiscal distress, job insecurity, and cultural anxiety. It is tempting to view new localism as a mere side product of the angry populism that has swept the United States and Europe. At its core, populism is a revolt against elites, whether economic or political. And as populists have altered the national discourse, they have, sometimes intentionally, sometimes not, attacked and weakened the nation-state, as well as supranational institutions and empowered local forces. The stated aspiration of the Trump administration to deconstruct the administrative state is ironically elevating the city-state as the locus of problem-solving activity. The collaborative networks of new localism, we believe, act as a countervailing force and cultural antidote to the rise of right-wing populism. Populism has re-energized a politics, most prominently represented by Donald Trump in America and the Brexit coalition in the United Kingdom, that is nostalgic in focus, nationalistic in tone, and nativist in orientation. The rhetoric of this populist politics seeks to create walls, literal and figurative, that inhibit the flow of people, goods, capital, and ideas across borders, the essence of the modern economy. The populism on the left, while devoid of national and ethnic chauvinism, often is characterized by a similar nostalgia for a world that no longer exists. Many of their positions take a far too simple view of multinational trade agreements and global economic institutions. Neither Bernie Sanders' view of the federal government as the realm of most solutions, nor Donald Trump's notion of economic nationalism fits the new global or local reality. Still, the populism that defined the 2016 U.S. presidential election shares much of its origins with new localism. It is rooted in the long economic restructuring and social transition that has exacerbated national income inequality and rattled the meaning of national identity. The core difference is that while populism has evolved into a national political strategy to exploit these grievances, new localism is a problem-solving philosophy geared toward alleviating them. In contrast to right-wing populism, new localism embraces diversity rather than ethnocentrism and is curious rather than closed. In contrast to the political extremes of both the left and the right, new localism is guided by pragmatism rather than by ideological fervor. New localism governs with a long-term view toward the future. Much of populism campaigns on a short-sighted return to the past. The problems of the new global age are significant, but the real solutions to these challenges will disproportionately come from the ground up. The more progressive variants of populism that seek to strengthen the safety net, reinforce investments in infrastructure and education, and protect consumers and the democratic franchise at large from the undue influence of money in politics are important complements to new localism. But as this book explores, the practical solutions to economic growth, economic inclusion, and environmental sustainability are more within the local domain than the national. Modern national and state governments seem unable to mount sufficient or sustained responses to modern challenges. Excessive partisanship has poisoned Congress and state legislatures and put representative democracy itself in a seemingly intractable state of gridlock and polarization. The stalemate is compounded by structural fiscal challenges. In Dead Men Ruling, the Urban Institute's Gene Sturley shows how growth in the non-child portions of Social Security, Medicare and Medicaid programs, and payment on the national debt are fueled by decisions made by prior Congresses, hence the title of his book. He bases his assumptions on Congressional Budget Office forecasts that by 2026, the federal government will be spending $4.1 trillion a year on entitlement programs such as Social Security, squeezing investments in housing, infrastructure, and education, and research and development. In short, Congress has little fiscal freedom to shift investments to new challenges. Thus, even prior to the onset of a divided Congress and the ascension of the Trump administration, the federal government had diminishing ability to invest at scale in the future through research that would spur innovation, new infrastructure better aligned with the 21st century economy, and the educational and other investments needed to support higher levels of economic inclusion. That responsibility had already devolved to society itself, to American cities and localities. As politics has become nationalized, problem-solving has become localized. The local advantage. Cities and counties are solving problems because they can. The knowledge-intensive industries that increasingly dominate the U.S. economy seek the convergence of assets that many U.S. cities and metropolitan areas naturally possess, anchor research institutions, and collaborative ecosystems of firms, entrepreneurs, investors, and intermediaries. The emerging economy is revaluing proximity, density, authenticity, and the solid bones, historical buildings, traditional street grids, access to waterfronts, cultural institutions that can be found in the traditional downtowns and midtowns of communities large, medium, and small. Increased technological innovation has also enhanced the role of cities. As the basic science and applied research conducted in universities, hospitals, and companies reach commercial markets, cities have accelerated the invention of new technologies. Such progress in recent years is giving cities new ways to grow firms, value, and jobs. Some examples are Chattanooga's efforts to create the smartest energy grid, Pittsburgh's decision to be a living laboratory for testing driverless cars, and Chicago's decision to open up public data for use by entrepreneurs and technology firms. The role of cities as markets enables them to also be market makers in granular and novel ways. Technological advances, more broadly, have sped up a city's ability to change and evolve, sharpening the contrast with sluggish legislative processes. As national and state governments have grown more sclerotic, the ability of traditional governments to act with agility and discretion has been lost. Cities, however, can accumulate public, private, and civic wealth to create alternative paths for the design, financing, and delivery of solutions rapidly. Localities are the testbed for a dizzying array of innovations: charter schools, smart meters, mobility apps, social enterprises, based on the simple premise, hubristic in some cases, that I can do that better. The nature of problem solving is also changing, further reinforcing the growing preference for local responses. Tackling complex issues such as climate change or social mobility, or the deployment and employment impact of disruptive technologies, should work toward solutions that are integrated and innovative, rather than dictatorial and prescriptive. As the political analyst Yuval Levin has written, "The absence of easy answers is precisely a reason to empower a multiplicity of problem solvers throughout our society, rather than hoping that one problem solver in Washington gets it right. Cities that are characterized by multidisciplinary and multi-sectoral networks, rather than by the narrow, specialized silos of federal or state bureaucracies, can think outside the box. A national transportation agency tends to address transportation challenges, say traffic congestion, with transportation solutions, often widening a road. To a person with a hammer, everything looks like a nail. A city is more likely to bring other solutions to bear, based in, say, housing or land use or technology, to solve the same problem. Cities and other localities can craft and deliver better solutions to hard challenges, since they match problem-solving to the way the world works, integrated, holistic, and entrepreneurial, rather than compartmentalized and bureaucratic. They can also put more players on the problem-solving field in ways that are quintessentially modern and imbued with new technological potential. Such mayors as Greg Fisher of Louisville and Rahm Emanuel of Chicago, for example, have successfully tasked entrepreneurs to take on social challenges and apply the ethos of the startup world to the urban arena. A cultural affinity for public purpose and volunteerism is deeply rooted in localities. Cities are home to tens of thousands of mediating institutions, churches, community organizations, business associations, philanthropies, that play a critical role in addressing the most difficult challenges faced by families and neighborhoods. As former New York Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan made clear throughout his long career, the federal government should set a strong platform for family and community success, but cannot substitute for or take the place of community institutions. As he noted in a speech to the National League of Cities in 1985, federalism is not a managerial arrangement that the framers hit upon, because the country was big and there were no telephones. Federalism was a fundamental expression of the American idea of covenant. To be sure, the issues that many cities face, from deep-seated poverty and aging infrastructure to legacy liabilities that crowd out needed items from public budgets, are difficult to overcome. But the most creative solutions will come from local initiatives, in the places where schools are managed, jobs are created, budgets are designed, contracts are negotiated, and infrastructure choices are made. Cities share another advantage over the nation-state in their ability to respond nimbly and flexibly to challenges and opportunities. The federal government has very little discretion to make investments that respond to non-natural crises, such as the Detroit bankruptcy or the Ferguson and Baltimore disturbances, or to adjust to broader demographic transformations or technological disruptions. The uninterrupted growth of entitlement programs and the proliferation of highly rigid programs have created a government that, like a fossil, is inflexible and stiff. Incredibly, a small city or regional philanthropy has more discretion to make smart, aligned investments than distant federal agencies do. Problem-solving close to the ground rather than policy-making from a remote national or state capital has the tangible benefit of customization. A local solution can be a more efficient use of resources, since it is more aligned with the distinctive needs of a particular place. A weak market city, such as Detroit, needs to demolish blighted housing in order to boost value. A hot market city, such as Boston, needs to build and preserve more housing to meet demand. National and state legislatures, by contrast, tend to enact one-size-fits-all solutions, and, for political reasons, prefer spreading public resources evenly, like peanut butter across a slice of bread. New localism is thus a break on national uniformity. It allows places to focus on the challenges they actually have, rather than on the issues du jour favored by national governments or national constituency groups more broadly. It recognizes and celebrates the differences between regions. The country draws its strength not only from being one nation politically, but also from having multiple nodes of energy, innovation, and experimentation. Finally, cities reflect a new circuitry of civic innovation. The ability to adapt, tailor, or replicate an innovative practice invented in one city in other cities. All cities, whether developing or developed, new or old, large or small, face similar challenges. The fact that multiple cities in radically different circumstances are simultaneously trying to solve challenges makes them more likely to innovate than hyper-specialized national agencies. And when cities join together to commit to common quantifiable outcomes, as is now happening with the response to climate change, the drive toward new replicable solutions and routinized financial mechanisms is accelerated. The commitment of hundreds of cities to the climate goal of the 2015 Paris Agreement illustrates the growing power of new localism. Collective accords and campaigns will inevitably engage such societal and urban challenges as early childhood education, crime reduction, and transportation choice. What follows? Our framework. This book chronicles the rise of new localism. But it is as much about what happens as it is about what has happened, reflecting our strong conviction that much work remains to be done if new localism is to successfully fill the vacuum left by higher levels of government. 5 key points about new localism provide the frame for this book. First, new localism is not the same as local government. New localism refers to multi-sectoral networks that work together to solve problems, as well as the institutional vehicles they invent to get things done. Local governmental leaders increasingly understand the horizontal nature of power and how to involve and catalyze civic and private sector partners. Second, the devolution of power and problem-solving to local levels is not an argument against the vital importance of federal and state governments. Emerging changes at the ground level do make a strong case for re-engineering aspects of federalism, including clarifying the strengths of different levels of government and considering how new localism might provide a more agile approach to social equity challenges. The federal government must...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?